Our last case this morning is 2020-495, the State of Ohio versus Leandre Jordan. For the appellant, Ms. Nelson.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor and Associate Justices. May it please the court. My name is Sarah Nelson, here on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Leandre Jordan, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. We're asking this court to narrow the scope of the felony arrest statute in Ohio by issuing a rule that requires warrants to precede felony arrests whenever practicable. This rule is necessary because currently under revised code 2935.04, law enforcement has no constitutional obligation to obtain an arrest warrant prior to making a felony arrest. The felony arrest statute only requires that police have probable cause and make their arrest in a public place and allows for the arrestee to be detained until a warrant can be obtained. In this case, Mr. Jordan's arrest was not formalized until after a search warrant was executed, a search warrant that was supported by information obtained as a result from the search incident to his arrest. And notably, that arrest occurred 8 days after the burglary offense, which he was alleged to be involved in, at a time when he was not engaged in any criminal activity, and at a time where he was no longer driving the vehicle that he was suspected to have been driving around the time of the burglary. Despite warrantless search and seizures being unreasonable, or per se unreasonable, an arrest warrant seems to never be required under the felony arrest statute at a time that meaningfully protects the right to be free from unreasonable seizure. Such warrantless arrests are protected in Ohio because they've been deemed generally constitutional so long as the arrest is supported by probable cause. But constitutionality of a felony arrest should not end at an officer's determination of probable cause, given that the Constitution demands that probable cause be determined by a neutral and detached magistrate. Accordingly, we're asking this court to find that despite probable cause, warrantless felony arrests can still be unconstitutional if police had ample time and opportunity to obtain an arrest warrant prior to the arrest. In Ohio, the Second District Court of Appeals has been willing to scrutinize and invalidate warrantless arrests when there's ample time and opportunity to obtain a warrant prior to making that arrest. And in reaching this decision, it relied on this court's authority in State v. Heston, which set forth a constitutionally appropriate standard for warrantless arrests. It includes a probable cause determination in addition to a finding that it was impractical under the circumstances to obtain a warrant. Now, the First District declined to follow the Second District's analysis and reliance on Heston because it thought that those decisions were at odds with this court's decision in State v. Brown from 2007, which followed the United States Supreme Court opinion in Watson, which held that probable cause arrests on a felony in a public place are constitutional. But Watson can be read narrowly and should be cabined to cases involving exigent circumstances or contemporaneous arrests. The majority in that case, despite its holding, advised that warrants should be obtained when practicable. It just declined as part of its holding to apply an exigency requirement in every probable cause arrest.
But didn't the court also in Watson go through and state the common law rule and state that with approval? I mean, Watson seems pretty clear that the court thought the common law rule that a police officer could make a warrantless arrest was part of the constitutional requirement. And I mean, it's hard to read that case the way you suggest.
I agree that is what the majority opinion analyzed, and that was their conclusion about the common law. But I would point out that the dissent takes issue with that because it distinguished common law authority to make felony arrests between and felony arrests today, which there are more felonies present today than there were on the common law authority end. So we're giving police substantial more authority to arrest on more charges presently than we did back then. And despite the common law authority in that distinguishing difference, you know, the Watson case, when we say it can be read narrowly, it's because that those factual circumstances in that case included a contemporaneous arrest. And that is something that is factually distinct in our case here. And that's an important point because if police are going to act on probable cause, it should be because there is some urgency present that requires them to forego the warrant requirement. And we don't have any circumstances like that in this case, which renders Mr. Jordan's arrest unreasonable. To the extent that Watson doesn't comport with the rule that we're advocating for today, though, we would ask that this court find that the Ohio Constitution affords more protections to Ohio citizens than the federal Fourth Amendment does, and adopt our rule under Article 1, Section 14 of the Ohio Constitution.
Is there anything in the text, history, tradition of the Ohio Constitution that would support the results you suggest? I don't see much historical analysis in your brief.
Well, I would rely on this court. I would direct this court to its decision in State v. Brown from 2003, when it was willing to depart from the federal standard and afford more protections to Ohio citizens in the context of a minor misdemeanor arrest. And I think that analysis is pertinent to this case as well. Particularly on the interest balancing analysis, we have unfettered police discretion seemingly pursuant to this statute, and that interest substantially outweighs the interest now for the individual to be free from unreasonable seizure. And in order to bring those interests back into balance, we need to narrow the circumstances in which law enforcement is allowed to act on probable cause arrest to protect that crucial right to be free from unreasonable seizure. Also in State v. Brown, this court noted the fact that Montana had reached a similar decision with respect to the minor misdemeanor warrantless arrest issue. And in this case, we have similar out-of-state authority supporting the rule of law that we're advocating for today. In 1994, New Mexico was willing to depart from Watson under its own constitution because it refused to allow the warrantless arrest authority to end at a probable cause, an officer's probable cause determination. Because the Constitution does protect against unreasonable seizures, and that unreasonableness is protected by the warrant requirement. So if police are going to have statutory authority to act on probable cause, they also need to show that it was impracticable to obtain a warrant beforehand. The New Mexico Supreme Court specifically asked for exigent circumstances to be present in order for the law enforcement officer to forego the warrant requirement. And the Campos case is really interesting because the officers were acting pursuant to a statute similar to the one in Ohio that allowed probable cause arrest, and they were not hesitant to invalidate that arrest on the basis that there was no exigency. Furthermore, they continued this case and affirmed it as recently as 2015 when they upheld a warrantless arrest when there was sufficient exigent circumstances. And when we read these two New Mexico cases together, they demonstrate how requiring an arrest warrant, when it's practicable, is absolutely a workable standard. It does not unduly burden law enforcement, but most importantly, it protects citizens under the mandates of the Constitution rather than a statute. Allowing probable cause to end the constitutional analysis jeopardizes the right to be free from unreasonable seizure. It eliminates the vital pre-check on law enforcement authority that the Constitution's warrant requirement provides for. We're assuming by allowing probable cause arrest without judicial scrutiny that the post-arrest check on law enforcement conduct provides a meaningful protection against unreasonable seizures, but we're forgetting that that post-check is often clouded by hindsight bias. In this case, there was no meaningful constitutional protection provided to Mr. Jordan. He was denied his right to have a neutral and detached magistrate determine probable cause because there was no pre-check before his arrest, and there was no meaningful post-check because, as I stated earlier, the next steps in this case were to obtain a search warrant based on the information developed from his post-arrest. Now, based on these facts, it's clear that constitutional restraint on a felony arrest is necessary because otherwise police will be allowed to avoid the warrant requirement and citizens will lose a critical constitutional protection against unreasonable seizure. For these reasons, it's our position that given the constitutional violation in this case, that triggers the exclusionary rule, which should be applied just as it was in this court's decision in State v. Brown. The good faith exception is inapplicable because police did not obtain an arrest warrant in this case. Their conduct cannot be said to be objectively reasonable because the statute itself does have a warrant component to it, but that was completely evaded. Whether it was deliberate evasion or grossly negligent conduct, either way, it was not objectively reasonable to forego a warrant and to obtain a search warrant instead. Respectfully, we would ask this court to find that Mr. Jordan's warrantless arrest was unconstitutional, apply the exclusionary rule to the primary and derivative evidence obtained as a result of his illegal arrest. If there are no further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Cummings. You'll have to unmute yourself, Mr. Cummings.
I apologize. Good morning again, Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices of the Supreme Court. Your Honors, this is a solution in search of a problem. Peace officers have been permitted to make felony arrest in public based on probable cause since before our founding. And this fundamental precept has been, it's survived intact for hundreds of years. It's a bright line test in an era where we don't have very many bright line tests that are viable anymore. Yesterday's Tidwell case, a tipster's reliability is totality of the circumstances. Prior calculation and design is a totality of circumstances analysis. Here we have a bright line test that has served our country well for hundreds of years. It's been embraced by the common law. It's been embraced by the Congress. It's been embraced by most states in their own statutory laws and constitutions. And the appellant has really provided no compelling reason to this court to change what has been a workable bright line standard for generations. In this case, Mr. Jordan's rights are protected because the law still and will require that his arrest be conducted only if there is probable cause, and that will be tested in the courts. He claims he's prejudiced because the probable cause to arrest him went stale, but that's erroneous. That's a search warrant concept. Probable cause to arrest doesn't go stale. If there's probable cause to believe a person committed a crime today, that probable cause is still going to be there 2 months from now. That's why the law has for so long treated search warrants differently than arrest warrants. You know, the thing sought to be obtained in a search warrant is an item that can be moved, it can be destroyed, it can be whisked away, and that's why there is a time component to search warrants. A man or a woman who there's probable cause to believe has committed a felony, they take that with them. Wherever that person goes, so too does the probable cause to arrest that person. That's why the law has for hundreds of years treated probable cause to arrest in public places.
Counsel, how do you reconcile that with this court's decision in State versus Heston, which said an arrest without a warrant is valid where the arresting officer has probable cause to believe that a felony is committed by the defendant, and the circumstances are such as to make it impracticable to secure a warrant?
I don't reconcile it with Heston because I think Heston has been implicitly overruled by this court's rulings in Brown and all subsequent cases after. It hasn't done it outright, but I think the practical effect has been that Heston is no longer good law. It's been discredited and it's no longer applied. And I think that's why we have all courts in this state, all the appellate courts except the second district, apply Brown, embrace Brown, just as this court embraced Watson. And in 1976, when the U.S. Supreme Court released Watson, it wasn't new law. Watson, as Justice DeWine pointed out, the Supreme Court in that case traced the history of how long this concept has been in our jurisprudence, and it dates back to before our founding. Heston's an outlier. The second district cases are outliers.
Well, and Heston, of course, relied on this court's decision in Woodard. So it's not like it was an outlier. I mean, Woodard was decided in 66, said the same thing, and then Heston in 72.
Yeah, and that's correct. And when one reads the cases cited in Woodard, what one finds is that they cite U.S. Supreme case law that goes back many years prior, and yet all those cases deal with search of premises, private premises. You're getting again into the search of curtilage or people's houses. It's a different concept than arresting a person on probable cause that they committed a felony. Heston and Woodland or Woodards and all those previous cases, they all can be traced back to Supreme Court cases, which were discussing search warrants of premises, private premises. Again, the distinction has been made clear over time, and that's why we have this evolution away from Heston and these types of concepts, because the law has recognized that probable cause to arrest somebody is fundamentally different than probable cause to search. And that's why it's been embraced by not only the common law, but the Congress and most states' constitutions.
Under then what circumstances would law enforcement be required to get a search warrant? They could technically just wait until someone they suspected a crime is in the public, is outside, is somewhere in a public place.
That's correct. That's the law. That's the law in the state of Ohio. There is no boundaries on felony arrests based on probable cause in a public place. There is no limit on that. That's the rule.
What purpose does an arrest warrant serve? To be served at a home? To be served in private places?
Well, the warrant itself is not what Fourth Amendment jurisprudence is really all about. The Fourth Amendment is about making sure there's probable cause. It's not about getting a warrant or serving a warrant or getting it and having it one in time. That's not really what it's all about. It's about probable cause. And that's why the case law is developed around that being the focus. It's not about the little piece of paper itself. It's about, did the officers have probable cause or didn't they?
Well, isn't it also about the neutrality of a magistrate listening, or a judge, you know, of listening to the facts as relayed by the affidavit or the officer under oath, and coming up with maybe a more neutral approach to treatment of the defendant?
Well, this court is certainly free to do so. I mean, this court can't. I mean, Watson is going to be precedent, you know, under the Fourth Amendment. If this court wants to find that the Ohio Constitution affords greater protection in this area, it certainly is free to do so. But that would involve overruling Brown, countless cases after that. It would involve rewriting the statute out of existence, because now you're placing an exigency requirement on such arrests where none has existed. So this court can certainly do that, but as the law is now, it is not constitutionally required.
So how does the language in the Ohio Constitution differ from the U.S. Constitution that would allow us to make that protection greater?
They're essentially the same. The text is essentially the same, and this court has held that the Ohio Constitution is essentially coextensive with the Fourth Amendment to the extent of the protections it affords our citizens. Now, this court has deviated from that, and it has said that, I think, warrantless arrests of minor misdemeanors is not permitted in Ohio, and that is permitted under Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. So in that minor, small area, this court has deviated from the federal jurisprudence. But to deviate in such a major fashion on felony arrests, I think, would be a watershed moment, and it would completely disrupt decades, generations of case law and precedent. And I think that to make such a law would not reduce litigation as the appellant claims. It would be exactly the opposite. If there's now going to be an exigency requirement for public arrests, you can predict what the motion hearings are going to be composed of. Not only is the probable cause going to be challenged, but the timing of it, the exigencies, did they exist? Didn't they exist? In fact, I think you'll see defendants anxious to show there was probable cause early in the case so that they can then claim that the police were negligent and not getting the warrant right away. So this is just going to multiply tenfold litigation in the courts. And there's really no compelling reason to do
well,
so.
Counsel, let me just set it straight. I'm not advocating for this. I asked you the question because you cavalierly characterized a warrant as just a little piece of paper. I think it's a little bit more than that.
Well, I don't mean to be flippant. That's my own paraphrasing of case law that has said that the focus of this analysis is not on the warrant itself and not on the time might be available to get it. The focus is on probable cause. That
right.
That language is from the U.S. Supreme Court case law in this area. But I apologize. I didn't mean to be flippant about that. But I do think that's an accurate statement when we're trying to understand what the the jurisprudence really is protecting for felony arrest warrants in public. It's the probable cause component. And the validity of that concept goes back to the, you know, before our founding. And I think that it's going to be awfully difficult to change that. And I don't think, if you look at the briefs and you ask what prejudice is the defendant claiming here, it's hard to find where they articulate the prejudice that Jordan suffered here. The closest they come is saying that he was arrested on a stale probable cause. Again, staleness is not an arrest concept. That's a search concept. And more interestingly, I find that later in the brief and in their reply brief, the appellant talks about how delayed arrests don't serve government interests because it doesn't help the victims of the crime. If the police had acted quicker in this case, for instance, Jordan says, hey, you might have caught me with the money in the safe. It delayed the victim's ability to get their money back. I mean, Jordan's actually describing prejudice in terms of how it hurt the victims in this case. That shows you how there's really little prejudice to Jordan himself applying current jurisprudence, because probable cause is still going to have to be established in all of these cases, and it's going to have to be a precondition before he's arrested in public. I notice amicus, too, gives really no compelling reason to make a change like this, other than to note that it's kind of trendy right now. The Roberts Court seems to be cutting back in certain areas, like protecting the curtilage of your home, you know, the privacy of your house, your cell phone data, GPS tracking of your car, and this type of thing. Until the Roberts Court overrules Watson, I don't think a trendy, hopping on the trendy bandwagon is any reason to change what this court and the nation's highest court has been doing for hundreds of years. If this court has no further questions, I'll just end with, as I said before, I do think that this court certainly can find Ohio provides more protection in a case like this, but the court would have to overrule Brown. It would have to rewrite a statute. It would eliminate a bright line rule that's been working well for generations, and we have so few bright line rules that are workable. I think we ought to hang on to this one, I guess. And I don't think there's any real prejudice to defendants here, because ultimately probable cause is the touchstone of the analysis, and that's gonna have to be demonstrated.
Can you recite for me the statute you're referring to?
Sure, it's revised code 2935.04. And it's called when any person may arrest. And that's called the felony arrest warrant shorthand. And that's the statute that allows for felony arrests based on probable cause in public by anybody. And that's basically a codification, again, of the common law concepts, et cetera, et cetera.
So is it your argument that there isn't any temporal analysis with that? So for instance, the felony arrest, if someone, let's say a citizen, saw a suspected crime and then saw that person suspected of doing a crime a month later, the statute allows the citizen to make that arrest as long as it's in public, correct?
Correct, that's the verbiage of the statute, yes.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have nothing further unless this court has any further questions.
I would just like to start by recognizing that the Ohio statute in this case does have a warrant requirement. It says that the arrestee can be detained until a warrant can be obtained. So the statute in and of itself does contemplate obtaining a warrant. The big question in this case is, when does that have to be obtained? So if we accept that officers are allowed to make probable cause arrests, are they allowed to further their investigation based on that arrest and not obtain a warrant until they have additional evidence of an unrelated crime that they can now charge multiple crimes for? And I think that definitely runs afoul of the what the statute calls for. But in addition to the statute having a warrant requirement.
Did you argue anything with the statute below?
No, but it's relevant in this case because of the good faith analysis.
Ms. Ms. Nelson, I'm reading 2935.04, and it's when any person may arrest. When a felony has been committed or there is reasonable ground to believe that a felony has been committed, any person without a warrant may arrest another whom he has reasonable cause to believe is guilty of the offense and detain him until a warrant can be obtained. Does that reflect what Mr. Cummings just said?
Well, it reflects his acknowledgement that anybody can make a warrantless arrest under the statute at any time.
But I'm reading the last part of this, and then they have to they detain them until they get a warrant, correct?
Correct. That's exactly what the statute says. So there is a warrant component to this that we're evading based on this sole probable cause determination, because somewhere along the lines, we've just decided, or at least been applying the statute on a probable cause analysis alone. There's no timing component to when that warrant for the probable cause arrest needs to be obtained. And that is crucial, because the question here is, where does the neutral and detached magistrate come into play? Now, it's our position, because probable cause has been construed as a determination made by a neutral and detached magistrate, not a police officer. Police officers' determination should be the exception, and that statute provides the protection by way of presumably having the warrant obtained after the arrest is made, well, not after further investigation ensues.
I'll stop you right there, because detain until a warrant can be obtained, doesn't that pretty much presuppose exigent circumstances for not obtaining the warrant?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like it inherently expects that exigent circumstances be present in order to alleviate themselves of the benefit of the statute. Yes, I would agree with that position wholeheartedly. Again, and then in Heston comes along. So it's important also to note that the statute in this case was enacted in the 1950s, so pre-Watson. And then Heston comes along and imposes this impracticability component to probable cause arrests, also pre-Watson. So by saying that Watson overruled or discredited these cases, there was authority in Ohio pre-Watson that already provided more protection to Ohio citizens. And through Watson, then we're just sinking the floor back down to the federal level. We should maintain the already greater protections that are existing in Ohio prior to Watson and reinvigorate them in the modern day.
Thank you.
We're not deterring probable cause arrests in this case. We're just limiting the circumstances again to when they should be applied, exigent circumstances, or when circumstances make it where it's impracticable to obtain a warrant. So instances where a suspect is deemed to be a flight risk, or again, contemporaneous criminal activity, those would be circumstances that our proposition of law would allow for, even though this court could go as far as to just say exigent circumstances would be enough. And to the extent that this would create endless litigation, I take issue with that, because it actually would do the opposite. This rule would encourage police to get warrants. Warrants inherently protect police conduct. It promotes good police work. There would be substantially less to litigate from a defense perspective if warrants are obtained prior to the arrest or at a time close to the arrest before further investigation ensues. That's all we're asking for, is to reinvigorate the essential role of the neutral and detached magistrate and apply the pre-check with the warrant requirement before probable cause arrests are made, or at least make sure that it's imposed, the warrant is obtained shortly thereafter the arrest. And because none of this occurred in Mr. Jordan's case, his arrest was unreasonable, illegal, and therefore the information obtained as a result of the illegal arrest should be suppressed. There are no further questions.
Thank you very much. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn court?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.